If a player cleans his ball during play of a hole, except on the putting green, he shall incur a penalty of one stroke. That's the rule, Jerry.
But it's just a friendly game. Why do you always have to be such a stickler?
Because that's the way I was raised.
Welcome to Spirit of the Game, brought to you by the Colorado Golf Association. Here are your hosts, Ed Mate and Lewis Harry.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Spirit of the Game. How you doing there, Lewis?
Doing good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You seem rested.
Deep in the rule studying at this point.
All right. You seem a little rested now. You seem like you're the season.
Did my yoga today.
Nice job.
So, yeah.
Little, what is it, downward dog? And
yeah.
Do you do the Camila Vajegas Spider-Man move?
No, my body doesn't should, quite that move should
be
that
a,
way.
That should be a yoga pose. Yeah,
there's some similar ones. Did fish today? That's just good.
Yeah,
yeah. It supported the blocks on the back, open up the hips.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's good.
That's awesome. By the way, just chit chatting here. I saw you told me that Brad Ullman, who I know, who is the former executive director of the West Virginia Golf Association, is the VP of rules for LIV.
That seems to be the case.
And they're hiring a bunch of rules officials, or at least one. Was it one?
Yeah, the posting I saw was just, it's specifically for one. So, I don't know if that's for multiple positions or...
Since nobody listens to our podcast, although it's not true, we just heard from Kayla Kearns, our listenership continues to surge, which is just great to hear. Let me turn off my phone. Apparently like 8,000 people. So that really, we better be careful what we say. You going to apply for that job? Are you leaving us? Or,
no.
Okay.
I think I'll let,
okay. Not going to go to the dark side.
No, I'll prefer to keep my options open, okay. Not including that one.
There you go. We'll wait for the press conference. All right. So we got a good one for you this month. I'm going to say at the very beginning, this is not ready for prime time, but it's never stopped me from flapping my gums. And then we're going to solve pace of play. I'm going to solve pace of play. And you're going to attempt, think of this as a debate, what's wrong with my plan. And by the way, I'm not solving pace of play for golf. I'm solving pace of play for high level professional golf, LPGA Tour and the PGA Tour. Those, and I'm not worried about LIV, different thing. Can't solve that. I'm going to solve it. Okay. And we've done this now long enough to know this isn't going to come to as a surprise to any of our regular listeners. But to set the stage, I'm watching because I'm a golf nut, which is a good thing, right? That's my job. I work for the Colorado Golf Association. I'm watching the BMW Australian whatever that's going on right now. Okay. This was just the other day. And they're in Brisbane, Australia. And I just happened to watch, I turned it on, and Victor Perez, Cameron Davis, and Lucas Herbert are on the 12th hole. It's a drivable par four. They all drove it up close to the green, and they all hit pretty good approaches, all within, I'd say, 10 feet. Okay, Victor Perez is the first to putt. I wasn't planning on doing this, but I'm like, when is he going to hit this putt? And then they didn't cut away. I think they showed him the whole time. It took him a minute and 29 seconds to hit a 10 footer. He walked up and down the line. He did his aim point. He faced one direction. He faced the other direction. He crouched behind the ball. Once he got over the ball, he started all this weird stuff with his grip and, stared at it a minute and 29 seconds to hit a 10 foot putt, which he made. Okay. Way to go, Victor. Well done. Next player up, Cameron Davis. He's had at least 2 minutes to look at his putt. So by the time, and I was generous and said, how much time does he have? By the time Victor picked up his ball, generously starting a stopwatch, he had about an 8-footer. I put 6 feet in my notes here. It was short, a minute, and he missed it. Okay. But it was tap in. So he tapped it in. And then finally, Lucas Herbert, because they stayed with this group, took 29 seconds and he missed from 6 feet. So here we have a group that had their, so the point is that took them a total of, they were on that green for about 4 minutes. So just think about you know, just the raw distance covered. So you have this sport where you have to go from point A to point B to point C, if it's a two shot hole, and what, at least half the time is spent on the putting green. So my solution to pace of play is simply focus on the problem. Where's the problem? It's not on the tee on par fours. It's really not even on the tee on par threes, although that can get clunky and slow. It's not on the approach shots into greens. It's on the putting green. That's where the time is obscenely long. And unfortunately, the only way you're going to solve pace of play is to have accountability on the putting green and to change the culture. And nobody's going to like it. I recognize that this is not the good, this isn't good news for players who think what there's nothing wrong with, you know, I'm sorry, a minute and 30 seconds to hit a 10-foot putt when you've, that's ridiculous. So some shot clocks on putting greens. And then you say, okay, how does that work? And this is the part that's not ready for prime time. I am absolutely convinced that the shot clock on a putting green, if done properly, would solve pace of play on the tours. I'm convinced of it. So as you start to go into the splitting of hairs or the weeds on this a little bit further, and I was just starting to work on this. So the first putt, I think the player should be given 30 seconds once they arrive at the putting green. And believe me, I know that you start thinking about all the variables and they're infinite. One player's in the bunker, you know, when do you start the clock? You know, two players hit the green in regulation. It's not like every time all three players in groups of three or two players hit the green in regulation. So you have to have, you know, there's nuance here. There'd be training involved. It wouldn't just be, oh, it's so simple. Because the Claire bright light test of when to start the clock is not always clear. In baseball, it's pretty clear. And oh, by the way, baseball's proven you can make significant changes to pace of play. They will work and it will be received well. Baseball, anybody who says baseball did not have a problem, there's nothing wrong. Well, they acknowledge they did. And so that is that. If there isn't anything that's proving that something can be done, if there's anything, it's baseball. So here's just sort of a first stab at how I would construct the shot clock. So if in round numbers, you get 30 seconds once you get to the green to repair your ball mark and mark your ball. I don't think that's ridiculous. The first player gets a minute to putt from the time. So the shot clock official is going to start the clock and give the players 30 seconds to do their tidying. The first player who's turning, they have a minute. Okay, so Victor Perez would have had a minute. We would already save 30 seconds. And that's the thing. You start doing the cumulative effect of time saved for one stroke, you're saving 30 seconds. That's a lot. Every subsequent player gets 30 seconds because they got the benefit of all that time. Why would it take you a minute to hit a putt when the previous player took a minute and a half and you have a putt that's shorter? For goodness sake. And then all subsequent putts are 30 seconds. So if you were to apply that math, I guarantee you would be amazed. And I haven't done that. How much time would be saved if you just simply went, and that would be the beginnings of a, so now the floor is yours, to react to any and all of what I just said. What's driving my position is, number one, we have a problem. And so if you don't think we have a problem with pace of play, you can turn it. By the way, the LPGA Tour announced their schedule for next year. And guess what else they announced? A pace of play committee, because they have a serious problem. I'm watching last night. I'm watching Lydia Ko and whoever she was playing with. And then here's Nelly Korda, two groups on the tee on a par five. What's going on there? I mean, there is a problem. So anybody who says there's really no problem with pace of play has their head in the sand. And number one, number two, the problem is on the putting green. And number three, there is a solution. So we have a problem. We know where it exists and we have a solution and nobody wants to seriously discuss it. And it makes me furious. Okay.
Okay. You sure?
I'm done. Okay. I'm done. I'm going to take a drink of water. So it's all yours.
Yeah. I would fully agree that the majority of timing things happen on the putting green. In the times this year where I've gotten into a scenario where I've either timed a player or we've gotten into a timing scenario with a player. Very rarely is it on the tee. Very rarely ever timing a player on the tee. Sometimes you're timing them in the fairway, sure. But yeah, most of it timing wise, you're probably timing them either chipping around the putting green, hitting out of a bunker around the putting green, or putting on the putting green. So I fully agree that's majority of where that problem lies. The shot clock thing, yeah, it's interesting with the baseball comparison with the pitch clock in baseball. Because very much so, baseball had a problem. Game times were exceeding 3 hours, 3 hours, 20 minutes. And then you look at game times now with baseball and they're closer to 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 20 minutes. I think there's even been a few recorded instances where there's been a sub 2 hour baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball is an interesting one though, too, because it requires both sides to play at the same speed, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could have one side with a pitcher sure. who's blazing fast. My favorite baseball player of all time, Mark Burley, longtime pitcher for the Chicago White Sox.
Huh.
One of the fastest pitchers.
Yeah.
I think he had multiple times in his career where he pitched a complete game, 9-inning, sub 2 hours.
Wow.
Incredibly efficient pitcher, wasted no time.
Yeah.
Almost less than 12 to 15 seconds from getting the ball back from the catcher when he was throwing his next pitch.
Right.
So, but an interesting one there with baseball is it requires both sides of it.
Well,
so.
and to look at a sort of analogy in golf, that second player is the wind where they back off because, yeah. you know, like the batter steps out of the box. And of course the game in baseball now limits the number of times you can do that. But there are variables in golf. The elements intervene in the golfer backs off a shot or a camera clicks or whatever it may be.
But. Yeah. We always, you know, it's always been talked about in, you know, baseball, football, there's an offense and a defense. Well, there's not really a defense in golf. I guess, you know, you're playing against the golf course or
not in the weather,
if you're playing match play, I suppose there's a defense, you have an opponent, but
right.
Irregardless. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the pitch clock thing or the putt clock in this scenario is an interesting solution. The variables are, and then all the things that probably make it up though, you know, when that clock starts, when is the clock reset for the next player? Do you have a clock operator?
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess, you know,
I'm going to get to that here in a minute, but Keep going.
Yeah. So those things, I think, you know, is your clock operator on the 12th hole consistent with your clock operator on the 6th hole?
Mm-hmm.
And that consistent with your clock operator on the 3rd hole and the 17th hole. So those things would be interesting.
And again, here's one that is even so fundamental, what's the penalty? What's the penalty in baseball? Is it a ball? If you don't,
it's similar to a balk, isn't it?
But I mean, if there's no runners on and you exceed the shot clock, is that just and it counts two balls, one strike? Is it now three balls, one strike? I don't know.
It's a great question. But you have to ask someone who's on a baseball rules committee.
Well, and the other thing is it's not just a pitch clock. There's other pieces to it where you number of throws over the first, the number of mound visits, how many times the batter can step out, all those things there's a number of pace of play. And again, they're layered and complex and it's changed the game. It's absolutely changed golf. Changed baseball. If you're a baseball purist and you think about the strategy of a fast runner at first and the leads they take, once they've thrown over the limit, now, unless they pick them off, they can't throw any or they're going to give them a base. So believe me, this would be disruptive.
Well, it's almost, you look at those runners, we're getting, this isn't a baseball podcast, by the way.
We're making it one here. Yeah.
But it's almost become an advantage now because they're, you know, used to be they're watching the pitcher, that back foot.
Yeah.
Waiting for that move.
Yeah.
Or the move for the front foot towards home.
Yeah.
Now it's almost like the runner on first is keeping an eye on the periphery on the clock.
Yeah. And
once that clock gets down to a certain second to go, you know, the pitcher's probably throwing home.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And the runner's taking off.
And the point is, this needs to be disruptive.
Yeah.
You can't fix pace of play without changing culture. And you're not going to change culture without a tremendous amount of pushback. And the players have so much veto power. So let's just talk for a minute. What is the penalty? You can't give a player a one stroke penalty for the first time they go over the clock. So this is where it gets really, really
tough. I mean, let's talk about it in relation to how most pace of play policies work currently. Okay. Right.
Yeah, number,
when you have a player who, or a group receiving a warning because they may be, you know, whether your pace of play policy works on a checkpoint system and you've missed your checkpoint or works on a time and position system, like most pace of play policies do. The CGA pace of play policy works on timing and position. And now this group has become out of position, or they've become behind time and out of position. Typically, if you're using time and position, you're having to check both boxes off because you could have a group out of position, but they're 14 minutes ahead. Or you could have a group that is behind time, but there's nowhere for them to go.
Okay. So this is, to me, the biggest flaw with pace of play in golf, because we make this assumption that if you are in position, there is no problem. And that is, that's why it takes 5 hours plus to play golf, because the whole train is moving so slow, and it trains, it absolutely is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. So you grind to a halt, and now the pace of play committee is done working, because there's no way any group's out of position. By the time you get halfway through the morning wave, everybody's back to back to back. It's like trying to, you can't move on the highway, and you're done. So unless you can come up with a cultural change to move the entire train faster, so that's the whole point. You are still accountable to the shot clock. It makes no difference where the group is in front of you. And the group that says, well, what was the point of that? Why did you just rush me on that green when I'm going to be waiting on the next tee? Because we're trying to move the entire field faster. That's why. Mm-hmm. So you got to let go of that notion that somehow, because you're in position, you're no longer accountable to pace of play. That has to change. That is completely flawed. We're going down the penalty road. So that's number one. Yes, you can be, you're subject to penalty every time you step on a putting green. You are held accountable. I don't care where the group is. I don't care if you waited for 5 minutes in the fairway, because the only way we're going to make up time is if everybody putts faster.
Okay. Shoot first, ask questions second.
Well, no, the shoot first part is not, I mean, we haven't shot yet. Okay. What is the penalty? And if there's no bullets in the gun, then we're wasting our time. If there's no consequence for going over time, then we're not going to. So what is that consequence? What's the appropriate penalty that will make players play faster, and that is just not ridiculous? So clearly you're not going to penalize a player first time out of the gate. There needs to be a warning.
I said, is it structured like a typical pace of play policy now with a progressive penalty?
Yeah.
Where, you know, a warning translates into a one stroke penalty, translates into a general penalty, and then translates eventually into a disqualification.
Yeah. I think that there need, and again, it's, we all know that, that never happens.
Rarely, you know. By the way, in your Australian PGA example you started off with, I did read that Jacob Olsen, who was the 2024 amateur champion, now is a professional, did receive a one shot penalty in the Australian PGA for a bad time.
How about that?
So it
does happen. Doesn't happen.
I did see that he was the first to play his second shot in his group on a hole, and took 130 seconds to play his second shot.
Okay. And again, well, I think that's refreshing just because it's so rare. I also think it's frankly BS, because I guarantee you that was just a outlier, and there was probably, that was happening everywhere. And that's why the putt clock, and I like that term, I'm going to borrow your term, it's a putt clock, pitch clock. It's not a shot clock. It's a putt clock. This is a putting policy only affected. Again, we can continue to split hairs. What if you're chipping from the fringe, or you're putting from off? Is that a putt clock? Is it you? So again, trying to keep. So let's talk about penalties. I would say, just to throw out an idea, the first violation is a warning. The second, you get two warnings. The third is a penalty stroke. And if you show me a player who's violated the shot clock twice, and they are now I guarantee you the players who are slow are going to go, just like the guy watching for the pitcher's foot. They now know, okay, they've used up their, the other thing I like about this, each player is held individually accountable. It's not because of the group policy or the checkpoint policy is fundamentally flawed too. You can't hold player A responsible for player B's slow play. So this whole idea that the group, but a putt clock, that is all on you. And the way you behave on the putting green, the way you make use of time, that's where the behavior is going to have to change. So two warnings and a penalty stroke. And then I would just make it every subsequent is a penalty stroke. You don't need to stair step it. Fool me once, fool me twice, fool me a third time, start adding them up. A penalty stroke in golf is huge. That's the thing. And what the PGA Tour has done, and it doesn't work, they just slap wrists. They will fine these players. And that's what the LPGA does too. They use fines. And that the problem with it is nobody knows about it. You know, when you penalize a player like this guy that you just mentioned in the Australian, everybody knows he got penalized. If he had been fined, nobody would know. And that's why it has to be it can't be fines. That doesn't work. Mm. I think we solved it.
This is the hurdle, I guess, on the tour from the perspective of, we're talking about this on a tour level. Mm-hmm. The hurdle is, like you mentioned at the very beginning, of it's a member run organization. Mm-hmm. And when for lack of a better phrase, when the inmates are running the asylum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I would do, if I were the commissioner of the LPGA Tour, I would do this right now. And when I heard they have a pace of play committee, man, I'd love to be on that committee, and I'd love to be the commissioner and say, we're going to do this, because you're talking, first of all,
curious who makes up their pace of play committee.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. They just said they're creating one. And I guarantee you it's going to be the same old. Now, if that committee comes back with shot clocks, I'm going to go, there you go. Now that was a pace of play committee who did a good job. Cause here's a chance for the LPGA Tour to do something that's so needed and so innovative. And I would like to think that it would get more eyes on the LPGA Tour, which they need. And it would motivate the PGA Tour to do the same. If it worked, that's the place to start. And by the way, the LPGA, everybody talks about men's golf, women's golf. This is one thing they absolutely have in common. They are terrible. The women's game, everybody's quick to point out how it's, they're great, and they are. I mean, the players are fantastic. They're talented. They're so much more accommodating to the fans. They're appreciative of their sponsors. They're not just so obscenely wealthy. So it's a perfect place to start. But one place that they're just as bad is they take forever and they do the same old crap on the greens, and they don't get ready when it's not their turn to play. So, and if we can change the culture there, why can't we do it on the PGA Tour? So now, go ahead. No. I'm going to go to a new wrinkle here. So we've got the idea. It's a putt clock. We've got the penalties figured out. Now let's talk about how we're going to do this. Who's going to be, and again, it's a resource issue, right? And maybe this is where the LPGA, I mean, I look at the amount of money that is now being doled out. Why can't, and then they say, well, we don't have the resources to have a putting official in every, really? You can't find 18 people that can do this, that can be trained? I don't know. Is that impossible? What do you think? I mean, look about all the volunteers they get. Now, I know volunteers is a different thing. There's no penalties. Yeah. You get shot link volunteers and, the walking scoring officials, there's golf tournaments are silly with volunteers, but if you're not willing, and again, this is maybe one of the pain points of having a true pace of play solution. Yes, it's going to be disruptive. Yes, it's going to cost you money and resources. You're going to have to put somebody on every single green who is responsible for timing groups and who, and again, I think you should also be allowed to some degree of, protesting a ruling if the, I don't know, but what do you think? Is it realistic to get 18 people, or even if it's not, why can't we solve it?
I wouldn't want it to be 18 volunteers. I would hope that they would be, and I don't know if it's, you know, you get 18 referees that are doing it, but someone similar to a referee, if there's going to be penalties involved, I would think that that would need to be somewhat of a referee capacity. So yeah, it's just a matter of getting 18.
Well, one thing I want to try, and anybody listening who wants to come in and volunteer for this, is to watch televised golf, or, and I don't know how, cause they don't keep the camera on the same group all the time. They do this when they do the featured groups. It'd be a great time to do it. No pun intended. And just see how far apart you just sort of, here's what your task is. Your task is to, time how long it takes this group to do the following: mark their balls, repair ball marks. How much time was that? How much time did it take the first player to putt? How much time did it take the second player to putt, and so on, and just aggregate that data and find, just see how far off just basically just golfers would be, and with very little training, just to see how hard it was and how much variance there is. And if you're getting, I would bet that the variance from time to time to time would be pretty small. I don't think you'd have your interpretation where you'd have the most variance is, okay, everybody's going to be the same on arrival for the most part. And who, how long did it take from the time the group arrived at the green to for the first player to putt? And then how long did it take the first, you know, it's the time in between where I think you'd have a little bit of variance. You know, how much time do you give the previous player to mark and get out of the way? But you're talking about what, 2 seconds of difference? So my point is, I don't think you'd have a hard time training people to do it pretty accurately.
Sure. The I was going to bring up was, did you happen to catch any of the pace of play changes the tour is making next year?
I did not. I should have. And I'm sure they're nothing. They're going to do nothing.
Well, yeah, that, I think that's kind of,
yeah.
Not that it's, you know,
well, what are they?
So part of it is, they're amending the definition of out of position.
Yeah, wrong. They're already on the wrong. Because see, now they're solving for, again, they're,
so,
yeah.
Okay, so if a group on a par three hole is, so if they arrive on the teeing ground of a par three while the group in front of them is on the teeing ground of the next hole, they're still considered to be in position.
So in other words, we'll that's going the wrong way.
Okay.
It'll be even harder to get out of position. Okay.
So they're adjusting the beginning of the timing process to provide players additional time to find a fixed reference point and pace back to their ball.
So we're going to give them more time there.
Yep.
Okay, so we're...
Players will no longer be subject to fines solely as a result of timings, bad timings, and excessive shot timings during major championships.
Oh, okay. Doesn't seem very... I think we're going the wrong direction.
Reducing the fine structure of bad times from $50,000 to $10,000.
Okay, great.
And reducing the excessive shot time fine from $10,000 to $5,000. And then... in addition to that, there's just more some internal stuff, increasing the fine for your average stroke time from 20,000 to 50,000.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of it is just fine. Just
yeah.
Fine
so
stuff.
What they're saying is we're going to make it even more player friendly. You're going to be able to play slower. There are going to be fewer consequences. Sure. It's going to be harder to even be subject to timing because of the way we're redefining out of position. So now we're going to reduce by probably 20% the number, and the officials are complicit in this too. They don't want to time. They don't want to be the bad guy. They don't want to. So they're like, let's make it easier for us. So we won't have to time players as much as we used to because they don't like it. So
in addition,
there's no hope.
In addition to the field sizes going from 144 to 120 for some of those events.
Yeah. And eventually we're going to be playing in singles with a walking marker. So that we can get these guys around in 4 hours. I mean, they're playing in groups of two for goodness sake now, and they're barely able to play in 4 hours. That's a big difference. And that's something that they're playing in groups of two with 12-minute intervals, and they still can't play in 4 hours. I mean, Bobby Jones and Walter Hagen, and they're just rolling over in their graves as they watch this sport and these guys. And it's on the green, and the amount of time they take to meticulously line up. That's another thing that should go away. You should not be allowed to line up your golf ball. You should not be allowed to do that. again, we get so, well, how would you do that? I don't know. Figure it out. You can't line up your golf ball. You can't sit there forever. But again, the point is, it's all on the putting green. That's where pace of play. But it sounds like the PGA Tour does not believe they have a problem. If anything, they feel like their pace of play policy is way too harsh. So they're gonna make it more player friendly.
Kerry, are you a fan of so at our USGA Amateur Championships now, we have Model Local Rule G12 put in at the Amateur Championships.
Needless to say, I don't know what that is.
Okay, well, I was going to explain it to you.
Okay, so good.
G12 is, it limits your, or restricts you
sounds
from
like
using.
A, it sounds like an SUV. It's the new Mazda G12. Sorry. Yeah.
It restricts you from using green reading materials on the putting green for strokes made from the putting green. So essentially what it does is once you get up to the putting green and your ball's on the putting green, that yardage book or that green book in the back of your pocket can't come out anymore. Mm-hmm.
You know, that one also strikes me as funny. Here we are. Go back to the original 13 rules of golf. One of the original 13 rules was not, and I'm saying this facetiously because clearly they didn't have the technology, green reading material, but there was a rule that says you cannot mark your way to the hole. That was basically what it said. You can't put things out in the landscape to create breadcrumbs for you to get from point A to point B. Well, what is it when you take a golf ball and you put a line on it and you line it up with exactitude, if that isn't marking your way or giving you an artificial aid to guide you to the hole, then what is? So here we are as rule. Oh, we're so appalled at green reading materials. Let's get rid of those. Those are terrible. The true golfer reads the greens, you know, through hard work and hard, you know, that's part of the traditions of the game. And yet we have golfers lining them up with these lines. Give me a break. We're so hypocritical there in my opinion, which I have plenty of, right?
As someone who doesn't put a line on their golf ball. Yeah.
Well, you're rare. I mean, it's so funny. I remember we did a clinic with Hale Irwin and
I've never liked that at all. Putting a line on your golf ball.
Yeah.
Because to me, you know, if I'm watching a putt and that line starts wobbling, it starts getting in my head that, you know, the putt's not being hit correctly.
Yeah.
And if you're not seeing that line flip over end on end over and over, it's like you're chasing this perfect putt
Well, there's a lot of old guard players like Hale Irwin that completely agree with you. This was in many years ago. Hale Irwin came and did a junior clinic, a short game clinic for the AJGA tournament that was at Common Ground. And we had him just kind of talk through putting. And I asked him, just make this 8-footer. Just show us what you do on this 8-footer. He goes, no, I'd rather see one of these young players come and do that. So a very brave volunteer player came out and he proceeded to mark the ball, brought his ball out, used the line, and Hale Irwin stopped him with a smile on his face and said, so what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm lining it up. He goes, oh, so you're slow. And the kid kind of looked sheepishly like, and he's, oh, it's okay. Go ahead. Keep doing it. So he goes through his routine and he looks at it from both sides. And I mean, I didn't coach the kid. I had no idea this was going to happen. And then he proceeds to miss the putt. So
I could have told you before even hearing that story, I could have told you he was going to miss.
Oh, of course. Well, that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of, there was a couple, it was seriously, there was between kids and parents, there was 200 people around the screen. So Hale Irwin said, well, let's give this young man, whatever his name was, Steven, a round of applause. And then he says, all right, first of all, why are you lining up the putt? Why are you using that line? I don't want to see anything. If I could have a golf ball with no marks on it, that's what I want. This is a golf ball. It's not a ruler. It's a golf ball. It rolls. I want to roll this golf ball into the hole. So he said, and don't go over there and look at it at the other side. There's no reason to. If I were to pour water on the screen, the water would go that direction. Isn't that pretty clear? Why would I confuse myself and go look at it on the other side? And then of course, no practice strokes, by the way. He said, there's no reason to do that. Just get over this thing and hit it. And he knocked it right in the middle of the hole. And by that time, there was a fair amount of pressure on him because he talked himself up quite a bit. But needless to say, Hale Irwin has made a few clutch putts in his day that were more meaningful than that one. But anyway, that would be another change that I would, if, and then, so really there are three things here. Because the lining up of the golf ball would help pace of play tremendously. And it frankly, it would almost be, if you did that, the need for the putting clock would definitely be reduced. Because how much time do you does it take for the player to go through that? You know, Bryson DeChambeau, he's a great example. There's so many others. And he's so successful. And oh, by the way, the players that are winning tournaments do line up their golf balls. They do. So you and I may have an opinion, but and even Hale Irwin is like, guess what, Hale?
Well, I have a perfect, I have my own solution to that. I just don't play in tournaments. So.
There you go. Rory McIlroy doesn't do that. He's one that doesn't line up his ball. I don't think Jordan Spieth does it. Maybe he does.
Should have lined it up at Pinehurst.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep, might have helped him. If he'd taken about a minute and a half on that two-footer, he might even have made it instead of 20 seconds. All right, the final thing on this is my just to stay with the rule of three, putting clocks, no lining up the golf ball, and number three, score, and they kind of go together, at least two of them. The score is official at the end of the hole, and that official on the green is also responsible for recording their scores. Mm. And there's a walking scorer and they are in communication and they are recording scores. And if there's any discrepancy, the player at the end of the round is responsible for alerting the discrepancy. It's their responsibility. So this is where we keep self-responsibility into this equation to report to the scoring committee if they have any disagreement with their score. And if they don't, the score is official. You can't get disqualified. The score is official. It's on the committee to get it right. It's on you to make sure they got it right. And off we go. So, and the other thing in the amateur game, if the scores were official at the end of the hole, we wouldn't have all that rigmarole at the end of a round. So, and I know I've been on that soapbox long enough to annoy you, which is my primary job here.
That one might be a part two for this one.
Yeah. No, I just think they kind of go nicely together because when the hole is, where does all this, all of this sort of, culminates on the putting green and it culminates 18 times. That's where, as they say, drive for show, putt for dough. So let's focus on the putting green. It's a contained area. And to me, that's where we should be shining the light and stop judging players by their position relative to the group in front of them. As long as we do that, and again, in all seriousness, I do get pretty cynical on this topic. And I can't help myself from continually trying to solve to defend myself or the feeling, the need to defend my, passion for this. Everybody admits it's a problem for the most part, but nobody really wants to solve it. So it's almost like in the PGA Tour, what you just read is the case in point. They really are saying we don't have a problem. And maybe the LPGA will take the lead on this. And I'll tell you what, I would become a fan of LIV overnight if they put shot clocks in on putting greens.
Send your idea to Brad Ullman.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe I'll take that job as a rules official. You got anything else for us? If I beat this thing to death. So, guys, fun way to end the year here.
Yeah, maybe we'll make a CGA pace play committee at some point.
Yeah, well, we've had them, believe me. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think I'm out of gas. So that was another fun one, Lewis. We'll do it again in the new year.
Okay. Till next time.